A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He means two pallets of 60 by 40 centimeter industrial storage boxes delivered to his loading dock in Jerusalem. Not a container. Not a truckload. He looks at Alibaba and sees two paths. Path 1, DAP, where he handles brokerage himself, which for someone who isn't a customs broker is a fast track to a phone call from Ashdod Port telling you your goods are accruing storage fees while you figure out which form you were supposed to file. Path 2, DDP, where the seller promises door-to-door delivery. Except Alibaba DDP is famously a suggestion more than a guarantee, and the surprise destination charges have ruined many a small buyer's afternoon.
When the Alibaba seller says DDP, what they often mean is, we'll ship it and hope the destination side fees don't blow up the deal. They're not bonded in Israel. They don't have a local broker on retainer. They're quoting you a rate that assumes everything clears without inspection, which it won't.
Daniel's stuck. The third option, the one he's actually asking about, is finding a local partner who buys from China routinely, verifies suppliers, handles the ordering, takes delivery at a Chinese warehouse, and then gets the goods to his door. He pays more, but he does less. And his question is, what are these businesses actually called?
That's where it gets interesting, because the answer is not a 3PL. And most people's mental model breaks right there.
These are procurement resourcing agents. They are emphatically not third-party logistics providers, and mixing them up is exactly the confusion that Daniel ran into. A 3PL manages ongoing logistics relationships, warehousing, inventory, reverse logistics. A procurement agent does transaction-based sourcing. They verify the factory, negotiate the order, inspect the goods, and then arrange one-time delivery. It's a different service for a different transaction type.
The market has this enormous gap between do-it-yourself on Alibaba and outsource everything to a logistics company. A whole category of businesses lives in that gap, handling thousands of small B2B transactions every month, and yet there's no standardized name for what they do. They call themselves sourcing agents, procurement agents, China sourcing companies, import agents. The taxonomy is a mess.
Which is why Daniel couldn't just Google his way to an answer. You can't search for a service category that doesn't have a consistent name.
The naming problem isn't trivial. It reflects a genuine structural gap in how we think about global trade. We've got clean categories for freight forwarders, customs brokers, 3PLs, 4PLs. But the person who says, tell me what you need, I'll find the factory, negotiate the price, inspect the goods, consolidate your two pallets with three other clients' orders, and get everything to your door in Jerusalem. That person doesn't fit any of the standard boxes.
Let's unpack what Daniel actually needs, because the answer isn't as simple as, hire a 3PL. And that's exactly the problem.
Let me define the model properly, because once you see it, you'll wonder why it took us this long to name it. A procurement resourcing agent is a local intermediary, often based in the same country as the buyer, or at least operating in the same commercial ecosystem, who does the entire China sourcing workflow on your behalf. Supplier verification on Alibaba or 1688, negotiating minimum order quantities down from we only sell by the container to fine, we'll do 50 units. Consolidating your small order with other clients' orders to hit volume thresholds, taking delivery at a warehouse in Yiwu or Shenzhen, and then shipping DDP to your actual door.
DDP actually means DDP in this case, because the agent has a bonded broker at the destination port. When an Alibaba factory says DDP, they're guessing. When an agent says DDP, they have a contract with a customs broker in Ashdod who clears containers every week.
The agent owns the entire Incoterms chain from factory floor to buyer's loading dock. That's what Daniel's paying the premium for. Not just the logistics, but the fact that someone with a local broker relationship is the importer of record, not Daniel.
Let's contrast this with the two paths Daniel already considered and rejected. Path 1. Direct Alibaba, DAP. He buys the boxes at factory price, but he's responsible for export clearance in China, freight forwarding, import customs in Israel, port handling, and last mile delivery. He's the importer of record, which means if customs flags the shipment, he's the one explaining to Israeli tax authorities why his industrial storage boxes aren't something else entirely.
Path 2. The full 3PL. This is where the confusion really bites. A 3PL wants an ongoing relationship. They want to manage your warehouse, your inventory levels, your pick and pack operations, your returns. They charge monthly storage fees, typically somewhere between 50 cents and $1.50 per pallet per day, plus per unit handling fees, plus shipping. For a business with recurring shipments, that model makes sense. For Daniel's two pallets of boxes, a one-time purchase, he'd pay more in 3PL minimum monthly fees than the entire agent markup.
That's the structural mismatch. A 3PL's minimum monthly storage commitment, $500 to $1,000, is designed for clients who need ongoing warehousing. Daniel needs someone to receive two pallets once and deliver them. A 3PL would take his money and give him a warehouse slot he doesn't need, plus a contract he doesn't want.
That brings us to the key economic insight that makes the agent model work. Daniel pays a premium, call it 15 to 25% over the factory price of the goods, but his time investment collapses. Self-sourcing on Alibaba means roughly 20 hours of supplier vetting, reading factory audit reports, negotiating with three or four sellers, comparing freight forwarder quotes, filling out customs paperwork, coordinating with the carrier. The agent route reduces that to about 2 hours, send the spec sheet, approve the quote, make payment, receive goods.
The premium isn't really a logistics fee. It's a time arbitrage. Daniel's paying to not become an amateur import specialist for two pallets of boxes.
This is also how you distinguish it from buying from a local distributor, which is the fourth option Daniel didn't mention but probably considered. A local distributor of industrial containers in Jerusalem buys by the container load, 2,000 units or more, warehouses them, and sells individually at 100 to 200% markup over factory price. The agent model gives Daniel factory direct pricing plus a 25 to 40% premium all in. The distributor model gives him immediate availability but at double or triple the factory cost. The agent sits in the exact middle of the cost convenience curve.
Which is why the taxonomy matters. If Daniel searches for 3PL for small import, he finds companies that want to warehouse his inventory. If he searches for local distributor, he finds companies selling at retail markup. The agent category is invisible to search because it doesn't have a standardized name, but it's the only model that actually fits his transaction.
One more distinction that matters. The agent is not just a freight forwarder with extra steps. A freight forwarder moves cargo from port to port. They don't verify suppliers. They don't negotiate MOQs. They don't inspect goods at the factory using AQL 2.5 sampling standards. The agent's core competency is supplier relationship management in Mandarin. The logistics are almost secondary. They happen to handle shipping because someone has to, but what Daniel's really buying is the agent's factory audit reports and their ability to call a supplier in Guangdong and say, I've visited your facility. I know your production capacity and I need 50 units, not 500.
The three-way comparison that structures this whole conversation, direct Alibaba sourcing, 0% premium, 20 hours of labor, high risk. Procurement agent, 25 to 40% premium, 2 hours of labor, low risk. Local distributor, 100 to 200% premium, 1 hour of labor, lowest risk. And 3PL doesn't even belong on this chart because it's designed for recurring volume, not one-off buys.
Once you see that structure, Daniel's question starts to answer itself. These businesses are procurement resourcing agents. They're not a cheaper 3PL. They're not a more expensive freight forwarder. They're a distinct service category for a distinct transaction type. The subcontainer, non-recurring B2B purchase. And the fact that we don't have a clean name for them is a genuine gap in how the logistics industry describes itself. To understand why the agent model works where 3PLs don't, we need to walk through every step of what an agent actually does. It's a 10-step process, and each step is a risk transfer from Daniel to the agent.
I love a good 10-step process. Walk me through it.
Step 1. Daniel sends the agent a spec sheet and a target price. For his industrial storage boxes, that's dimensions, material, load capacity, color, quantity, and what he's willing to pay per unit. Two pallets, roughly 100 units, and he's hoping to land somewhere around $30 per box delivered.
Which is the kind of specificity that saves everyone time. I need boxes. Gets you nowhere. I need 60 by 40 centimeter polypropylene storage boxes, stackable, rated for 50 kilos, in gray, 100 units, target price $30 each delivered to Jerusalem. That's a brief an agent can actually work with.
Step 2. The agent cross-references that spec against 3 to 5 verified suppliers on 1688 and Alibaba. And verified here doesn't mean the Alibaba Gold Supplier badge, which is about as meaningful as a LinkedIn endorsement. It means the agent has factory audit reports, either their own site visits or third-party inspections from firms like SGS or Bureau Veritas, plus trade assurance history showing the supplier actually delivers what they promise.
The agent isn't just searching Alibaba the way Daniel would. They're searching their own database of factories they've physically visited or had independently audited.
Step 3 is where the economics get clever. The factory's minimum order quantity is 500 units. Daniel wants 100. The agent negotiates the MOQ down to 50 units by combining Daniel's order with another client's, say, a hardware store in Haifa that also needs storage boxes but in a different size. The factory sees a single purchase order for 500 units across 3 SKUs. Internally, the agent is allocating 100 of those units to Daniel.
This is the consolidation play, and it's the thing Daniel could never do on his own. He can't call a factory in Guangdong and say, "Don't worry, I've got 3 other buyers who'll make up the volume." The agent can, because the agent has the client portfolio.
Step 4. The agent issues the purchase order under their own entity. Daniel's company never appears on any Chinese contract. The agent is the buyer of record in China, which means if there's a contract dispute, goods not matching spec, factory demanding payment before shipping, whatever, the dispute is between the agent's Hong Kong or Shenzhen entity and the factory. Daniel is insulated from Chinese contract law entirely.
Anyone who's ever tried to enforce a contract against a Chinese supplier from abroad knows exactly how valuable that insulation is.
Step 5. The agent inspects the goods at the factory before accepting them to the forwarder. They use AQL 2.5 sampling, the industry standard for general consumer and industrial goods. You pull a statistically significant sample from the production run, inspect each unit against the spec sheet, and if the defect rate exceeds the acceptable threshold, you reject the lot before it ever leaves the factory floor.
This is the quality risk absorption. If Daniel were self-sourcing, he'd wire $3,000 to a factory he's never visited, hope the boxes show up as described, and discover any problems when the pallets land in Ashdod, at which point he owns $3,000 of defective plastic and a shipping bill he can't reverse.
That happens more often than people admit. I've seen estimates that somewhere between 10 and 15% of first-time Alibaba transactions have a significant quality or specification mismatch. The agent's inspection step catches that before the goods move. The agent arranges LCL consolidation at a warehouse in Yiwu or Shenzhen. LCL, less than container load, is the whole reason this model exists. Daniel's 2 pallets don't fill a container. The agent combines them with shipments from other clients into a shared container, which means Daniel pays for 2 pallets of space instead of a whole container he doesn't need.
This is also where the agent's geography matters. Yiwu and Shenzhen are the 2 great consolidation points for Chinese exports. Yiwu for small commodities and general merchandise, Shenzhen for electronics and anything coming out of the Pearl River Delta. An agent with warehouse relationships in both cities can route Daniel's boxes through the cheaper consolidation point.
Step 7. The agent handles China export customs clearance under their own export license. They file the export declaration, provide the commercial invoice and packing list, and deal with Chinese customs if there's an inspection. Daniel never touches Chinese export paperwork.
Step 8. The agent ships DDP via express carrier or LCL sea freight to Ashdod port. For 2 pallets and plastic boxes, sea freight makes more sense than air. It's slower, 4 to 6 weeks versus 5 to 7 days, but the cost difference is enormous. Air freight on 2 pallets might run $2,000 to $3,000. Sea freight, LCL, maybe 900 to 1200.
Step 9, and this is where the DDP promise actually delivers. The agent clears Israeli import customs using their local broker network. They have a bonded customs broker in Ashdod who files the import declaration, pays the VAT and duties on Daniel's behalf, and handles any inspection requests. The broker has a power of attorney from the agent's Israeli entity, so the import clears under the agent's name.
This is the customs risk absorption. Israeli customs can be, let's call it, thorough. If they decide to inspect the shipment, someone needs to be available to answer questions, provide documentation, and potentially argue classification. The agent's broker does that. Daniel's phone doesn't ring.
Step 10. The agent arranges last mile delivery from Ashdod port to Daniel's loading dock in Jerusalem. A local trucking company picks up the two pallets and delivers them. Daniel receives the goods, checks them against the packing list, and the transaction is complete.
10 steps, and Daniel's involvement is basically 3 touch points. Send the spec, approve the quote, receive the goods. Everything else happens inside the agent's operation.
Each of those 10 steps is a risk that Daniel would otherwise carry. Supplier fraud risk. The agent vetted the factory. Quality risk. The agent inspected. Logistics risk. The agent owns the Incoterms chain from factory to door. Customs risk. The agent has a bonded broker. Daniel's only residual risk is paying for goods that don't meet spec, and even that is mitigated by the inspection at step 5.
Let's put numbers on this, because the fee structure is where people's intuition breaks. Daniel's boxes. Factory price $3,000. The agent charges a commission, typically 5 to 15% on goods cost, so call it 10%, $300. Plus a flat sourcing fee per SKU, $200 to $500. Let's say $350 for this one, SKU. Plus the logistics markup. The agent's actual LCLC freight and DDP customs clearance cost is around $900. They mark that up 15 to 30%, another $300. Total to Daniel, $4,850 versus $3,000 at factory price.
He's paying an $1,850 premium. But now let's price the alternative. Self-sourcing means Alibaba trade assurance fees, about $150. A freight forwarder for LCL, $700 to $900. A customs broker in Israel, $200 to $400. Port handling fees, $150 to $300. That's roughly $1,200 to $1,800 in hard costs alone, before we account for the 20 hours of his time.
If Daniel values his time at anything above $0 an hour, the agent route is actually cheaper than self-sourcing once you factor in the labor.
That's the operational mechanics. But the really interesting question is what this model means for the structure of global trade. Specifically, who gets to be an importer now?
Because the answer, until about 10 years ago, was businesses with an import department.
The procurement resourcing agent is enabling a whole new class of micro-importer. The solo entrepreneur, the small business owner, the startup that needs 50 units of a custom component, these buyers could never justify a full-time procurement person or a 3PL contract. The agent model gives them factory direct access at a scale that simply wasn't available before.
It's the Shopify-ification of physical goods sourcing. Shopify made it possible for one person in a living room to run a professional e-commerce operation. Procurement agents are doing the same thing for B2B importing. You don't need a supply chain department. You need a spec sheet and a relationship with one agent.
The geography of this tells you everything about what the model actually is. These agents cluster in cities with large Chinese diaspora populations and direct air and sea connections to China. Los Angeles, Vancouver, Sydney, Dubai, Tel Aviv, Rotterdam. They're not setting up shop and logistics hubs. They're setting up where Mandarin-speaking communities already exist.
Which is the giveaway. If this were primarily a logistics business, you'd see agents clustering around major ports regardless of demographics. But they cluster around language and cultural connections. The core competency is supplier relationship management in Mandarin, not warehouse management.
These are cultural linguistic bridges that happen to handle logistics. A Tel Aviv-based agent, I know, sources industrial equipment for Israeli startups, 8% commission plus $250 sourcing fee per SKU. He's visited over 40 factories in Guangdong and Zhejiang. His clients are all doing between $50,000 and $500,000 in annual import volume. Too small for a dedicated procurement team, too large for casual Alibaba ordering.
That 50 to 500K range is the sweet spot. Below that, the agent's fees eat too much margin. Above it, you can justify hiring someone internally. The agent model is a middle market solution for a middle market problem.
This is where the contrast with the local distributor model gets sharp. Daniel's default option, if he doesn't know about agents, is walking into an industrial supply shop in Jerusalem and buying boxes off the shelf. That distributor bought a container load, 2,000 units or more, warehoused them, and is selling individually at 100 to 200% markup. Daniel pays $6,000 to $9,000 for what the factory sold at $3,000.
Versus $4,850 through the agent. The agent is cheaper than local distribution, but more expensive than self-sourcing. It occupies the exact middle of the cost-convenience curve, and that middle position is why it's so hard to name. Our mental categories want things to be either buy direct or buy retail.
That brings us to the naming confusion head-on. Why these businesses call themselves sourcing agents, procurement agents, China sourcing companies, import agents, but never 3PLs. The term 3PL implies an ongoing logistics relationship. These agents do transaction-based procurement. One order, one delivery, relationship complete. They're closer to managed procurement service providers, but nobody's going to say that five times in a meeting.
The industry lacks a standardized taxonomy, which is exactly the confusion Daniel experienced. He knew what he needed. Someone to handle the whole transaction from factory to door. But he couldn't find the right search term because the right search term doesn't exist in any consistent way.
The lack of standardization creates a trust problem. Unlike 3PLs, which are typically bonded and insured with industry certifications, procurement agents operate on reputation and referral networks. The barrier to entry is terrifyingly low, a WeChat account and a contact in Yiwu, and you can call yourself a sourcing agent.
Which means quality varies from saved my business $50,000 to disappeared with my deposit and a WeChat sticker.
The sophisticated agents know this is a problem and differentiate aggressively. They provide factory audit reports from third-party inspectors, SGS, Bureau Veritas, 2V. They show you trade assurance history screenshots with actual transaction volumes. They offer client references from buyers with similar order sizes. And crucially, they provide transparent fee breakdowns that separate goods cost from service fees, so you know exactly what you're paying for the boxes and what you're paying for the procurement.
That transparency is the single best signal. If an agent won't break out the factory price from their commission from the logistics cost, they're probably hiding a markup somewhere. The good ones want you to see the breakdown because it proves their value.
There's a knock-on effect here that most people miss. When an agent provides factory audit reports and transparent pricing, they're not just building trust with you, they're building a moat against competitors. A referral-based market with low barriers to entry eventually sorts itself into two tiers, the ones with verified track records and the ones hoping you don't ask too many questions.
Which loops back to Daniel's original confusion. He's trying to evaluate a service category that doesn't have consistent naming, doesn't have industry-wide standards, and ranges from professional operations handling millions in annual volume to someone with a laptop and a prayer. No wonder he couldn't figure out what to call it.
Given all that, the practical question is, how do you actually find and evaluate one of these agents? Here's a five-question framework that'll separate the professionals from the WeChat account and a prayer crowd.
I'm ready.
Question 1. Do you provide factory audit reports from a third-party inspector? Not, I visited the factory, not their gold suppliers on Alibaba. An actual report from SGS, Bureau Veritas, or 2V with a date, a factory address, and documented production capacity.
If they hesitate on that one, the conversation is basically over.
Question 2. Can you show me the exact fee breakdown between goods cost, commission, and logistics? If the number is one lump sum with no line items, they're hiding a markup somewhere. The good agents want you to see the breakdown.
Question 3. Do you consolidate orders with other clients? And if so, how do you allocate shipping costs? Because consolidation is how they get the MOQ down and the freight cost down. but the allocation method tells you whether you're subsidizing someone else's shipment.
Question 4. What Incoterms do you use for the final delivery, and who handles customs clearance at destination? The right answer is DDP, with a named local broker. If they say, we use DAP and you handle import, or they can't name the broker, walk away.
Question 5. Can you provide references from 3 clients with similar order sizes? Not their biggest client who ships containers every month. 3 clients doing the same. $1 to $10,000 subcontainer orders you're doing.
That last one is the real filter. An agent who only handles large accounts won't give your 2 pallets the attention they need. An agent who specializes in micro importers will have references who sound like you.
Now the decision tree. When do you use which model? If your order value is above $10,000 and you have import experience, direct Alibaba sourcing makes sense. The savings justify the time and risk. If your order is between $1 and $10,000 and you want one-touch service, use a procurement agent. If you need the goods immediately and can tolerate a 2x markup, walk into a local distributor. And if you have recurring monthly shipments that need warehousing and pick and back, that's when a 3PL actually fits.
The key thing to remember, which I think is the single most useful takeaway from this whole conversation, is that the procurement resourcing agent is not a cheaper version of a 3PL. It's a fundamentally different service for a fundamentally different transaction type. Mixing them up leads to wrong expectations on pricing, wrong assumptions about service scope, and contracts that don't match what you actually need.
Daniel's 2 pallets of boxes are a one-time purchase. A 3PL would give him a warehouse slot and a monthly invoice. An agent gives him a delivered shipment and a handshake. Same outcome from the outside. Boxes at his door. But completely different machinery underneath.
To bring it all back to Daniel's original question, what are these businesses called? The honest answer might frustrate you. There is no single accepted term. The industry hasn't settled on one.
Which is itself the answer. The fact that there's no clean name tells you this is still an emerging category, not a mature one. Procurement resourcing agent captures the function better than 3PL, or sourcing agent alone. But even that's a description, not a standard.
That raises the open question I keep coming back to. Micro-importing is growing fast, driven by e-commerce platforms, remote work, direct-to-consumer manufacturing. You've got thousands of small businesses now doing what only import departments could do a decade ago. So does this service category formalize? Do we get standards, certifications, insurance products, a recognized logistics vertical with its own trade association and conference badges?
Or does it stay what it is now? A fragmented, referral-based market where the difference between a great agent and a thief is 3 client references and a willingness to show you the factory audit report.
I don't know the answer, but I suspect the volume of money flowing through these agents will eventually force formalization. Insurance companies don't like underwriting invisible supply chains. Banks don't like financing transactions where the intermediary has no standard designation. The pressure will come from the financial side, not the logistics side.
Which means the most interesting logistics innovation of the last decade isn't a technology. It's not a faster container ship or a better tracking app. It's a business model that fills the gap between too small for a supply chain department and too big for casual Alibaba ordering.
It's been hiding in plain sight, without a name, while quietly reshaping who gets to participate in global trade.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, linguists documenting Khoisan languages in southern Africa discovered that some click consonants are produced with a simultaneous nasal airflow, effectively a nasalized click, and that speakers of certain X dialects could sustain these sounds for over 3 seconds during ritualized storytelling, a duration that exceeds the average human breath hold for non-speech tasks.
3 seconds of nasalized clicking. That's a party trick I'd pay to see. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you want to send us a question like Daniel did, or if you've got a procurement agent story of your own, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We're at myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Hey. thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue. We chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.